Yeah, baby.
Here we go. We're going live right now.
The Killer Bees are counting down to Texans training camp.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
With the top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans season.
Texans training camp right around the corner, so we're going to be counting down the top 10 biggest storylines entering the 2022 season, entering training camp for the Houston Texans. I was watching an old NFL game, sometime last week, and they started to have like the countdowns and the report dates for the rookies, for the veterans, to every single NFL team, and I think there was a couple of teams that had rookies report yesterday. So like football season is here. We're going to start seeing the camp battles. We're going to start to see the Hall of Fame game, which is so significant and how much it symbolizes the start of the season. Brendan loves it because it's first day of daily fantasy preseason.
Something
football.
To bet on.
But anyway, something to bet on. Can never have enough of that. But today's storyline, as we continue to count down, we start to count down, the top 10 biggest Texan storylines ahead of training camp. Who's the lead back for this team? We've talked a lot about the Texans need to improve the running game for a variety of different reasons. One, just to improve the running game. It gives you a better chance to win, blah, 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 blah. But also what it means for the quarterback, Davis Mills. So as we look at the Houston Texans, who is the lead back for the local 11 heading into the 2022 season? Or who do you, and who do you think it will be by the end of the year?
Well, it's not the fight. It's not Rex Burkhead. I hate to break it.
He's still around, though.
Yeah, that's fine.
He's going to be.
He can be around, and he can be a motivational leader and a locker room champion.
I'm not sure there's a better running back in the NFL than Rex Burkhead
as an emotional leader.
All of the above.
Don't let me.
I will stand on the table. I'm the biggest Rex Burkhead stand that exists,
and that's a problem. But I think that from day one, it's Mac. Pierce has a chance to take over by midseason. But I think that no matter what they do, the two guys that they have as the top two related on the depth chart, the top two rated on the depth chart, they're head and shoulders above where they were a year ago, and there's no more David Johnson to have to worry about. So I think they're in a much better position.
There's no doubt they're in a better position. But which of the two?
I think Mac starts the season as the lead back.
Who has more carries at the end of the year?
A lot of it depends. There's injuries and there's performance. I think that both guys are going to have a better option to actually gain yards this year with the improvements to the offensive line. But I think that it really kind of gets into, from a Pierce perspective, how much does he grasp the blocking, the pass coverage, so that you can put him out there. It's not just about how many yards per carry he can get. If he doesn't understand how to protect his quarterback and he doesn't understand the other things that has to go with playing the position,
yeah,
which I believe Mac does.
See, I think there's pretty big concerns about the two of them. Like, I agree with you that the Texans running back situation's in a better spot July 18, 2022 than it was July 18, 2021. Like, you were getting ready for the season with Mark Ingram, and Mark Ingram was like, okay, like he was adequate. He was good enough that he fetched you literally the worst draft pick that you can get back in a trade, a seventh rounder in 3 years. But I think Marlon Mack's better right now than Mark Ingram was last year. Damian Pierce has more upside than what Mark Ingram had last year. My concern with Marlon Mack is he hasn't done it in a while. He has been injury prone. That stuff usually doesn't go away. Like, a lot of times we just ignore that injury prone guys are injury prone. Oh, he's going to last the whole year. He's going to be fantastic. I don't know if we can say that about Marlon Mack. Also, what you said about Damian Pierce holds true. What's he going to look like on the pass block? Because a lot of veteran coaches, and I do like this about Lovie Smith, where it looks like he's going to give the freedom for the young players and the rookies specifically to learn and to make mistakes, which, like, Bill O'Brien wouldn't have done that. But how does he look in pass pro, right? Is he making the right reads? Is he picking up the blocker that he needs to? How's he looking on pass routes, too? Do you trust him in that regard?
Absolutely.
So I could see a situation where Damian Pierce isn't getting a ton of run early in the year. Like what you said, Marlon Mack starts the year, but by the end of the year, he starts to close the gap. I believe if Mack stays healthy, he's going to be the leading carrier on this team. If he gets hurt early, it's probably going to be Damian Pierce. I still wouldn't rule out totally, though, that Rex Burkhead isn't closer than we think in the touches and the carries department.
That means they're further away than they think running the ball. Because I think that one of the reasons why I would continue to split carries is to keep them both healthy. And because you can go from series to series and get a change of pace, right? You can get a guy like Mack that's going to pound it. You can get a guy like Pierce that's athletic as hell, that can do it add a couple of wrinkles to the mix for you. But whatever the case, if they're both healthy, you have you know, way better options than you did a year ago. And you again, you're trying to give your quarterback every option to have balance and to be able to succeed when he's behind center. That gives you the best chance to keep them both healthy.
Yeah. See, I mean, let's be honest. In the modern day NFL, it's a timeshare period. Like, even the bell cows are getting 65, 70% of the touches. So it's going to be a work share. But if I was going to just break it down by percentages, like a very loose breakdown of percentages, I think it's going to be like 60, 30, 10. Marlon Mack, Damian Pierce, Rex Burkhead. I think Burkhead's still going to get a few carries. I think Damian Pierce is going to start off as kind of a third down back, change of pace back, get him in a couple of series. And then at some point where he's going to be the leading rusher by like week 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that area. One thing that I do like about the running game that isn't even the running backs, because these running backs better than they were last year. I'm not as high on Marlon Mack and Damian Pierce, at least as a rookie, as some people. Like, people think Marlon Mack's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher. I don't see that. A lot of people think Damian Pierce in year one is going to put up like 750, 800 total yards as a rookie. I think he will at some point. I don't expect that in his rookie season. Right. One thing that is encouraging about this running game, though, that has nothing to do with the running back room, this offensive line should be much better at run blocking than it was a year ago. I realize Laramie Tunsil was on the roster a year ago, but he wasn't playing a year ago. Tytus Howard was still being moved around a lot, not getting comfortable with one position. And who I think could be the biggest reason for a successful running game, or at least better than it was a year ago, is your left guard, Kenyon Green. Like, the reason you draft guards is to pave the road for your running back. And I think the addition of Kenyon Green, a legit first-round quality guard, is going to do wonders for this running game, at least in opening up the lanes. And if Marlon Mack and Damian Pierce aren't doing a good job of following that, then that's more on them than the offensive
line. Well, I think you touched on it, and we both have touched on it in the past. The fact that there's a couple things that had to happen with the offensive line, and whether they committed in the first round to an offensive lineman or not, the main thing was to make sure that you've got everybody on the same page in that organization, coaches and upper management, that the linemen are going to play their given positions and they're going to stay there. They're not going to mix them up and match them and try to take two different positions and alter them because of one injury that may occur on your offensive line. On top of that, when you went and drafted Green and you've got a guard, which basically signifies your attention to the running game, and you have two tackles that should be above average on either side, and you start developing the rest of the continuity of your offensive line, that says as much or more about your running game, just as much as it does protecting the quarterback, as anything else from a line that has been much maligned in the last 5 to 10 years more than any other position group on this team.
You were proud of that one, weren't you?
No, I'm not really.
I think you liked that one. Now,
they all come to me just so quickly and casually. I don't rate them anymore.
If we are being completely honest, neither one of us expects this offensive running game to be that great. Last week we were doing the bids for how high.
Yeah, not even top 25.
Well, I think we had I had the Texans top 27. I think that's what I won the Texans with. So neither one of us expecting the Houston Texans to be this earth-shattering running game that's just going to, you know, shove the ball down defenses' throats. Alex Villanueva on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I like this joke. He said, Rex with the huddle visits, which is obviously a play of the Carlos Correa on the mound visits. I like that one quite a bit. Well done, Alex. And then also, Clutch City, who is somehow a Colts fan. I don't know. He has the avatar and screen name Clutch City, but he's a Colts fan.
Well, it's different sports, different teams.
Clutch City? He says the whole city.
So he's a Rockets fan? Clutch City is directly correlated to the Rockets.
I don't know. I feel like if you have Clutch City as your name, Jeremy, that you shouldn't be a Colts fan.
You didn't do it, but I hate to break this to you, but how many people in Houston the minute that Bill O'Brien happened?
He said Oilers left when I was a kid, so it was, okay,
it was
prior
something.
To that.
Yeah,
but how do you go to the Colts?
Yeah, that's a good point. In your division, maybe as a parting FU to your favorite team. Now I'm not only going to go away from you, I'm going with a team in the division to kick your ass.
Look, he's defending it now. I had no team. Grandfather was a Colts fan. Is it okay to be a Colts fan if you're a lifelong Houstonian? 713-780-ESPN.
I don't have to be a Lions fan. They suck too bad. But like, that would be like me with the Bears or the Vikings.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Anyways, you said Marlon Mack won't last 4 weeks. I have experience in these matters, which I think is a fair point. 713-780-3776. Who do you think will be the bell cow, if you want to call it that, for the Houston Texans in the 2022 season? All right, Brendan's challenging us when we come back. You get to draft one NFL veteran, and you get to have their career arc. Can't be a quarterback, though, so you can't pick Aaron Rodgers, your favorite player. You get this guy for the Texans next year. Who would it be? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about New Breaks. I love New Breaks, and you will too. And all the listeners to this show that have heard me talk about it that went to New Breaks know that there is only one way to do your breaks from this point forward, and that's newbreaks.com. Why I tell you that, and why do you hear the listeners say that? It's because it simplifies everything, and saving time is saving money. At New Breaks, they come to you to do what they do, which is only breaks. Certified technicians that only do breaks come to your job, come to your house. Wherever you are, they'll meet you, and while you're doing whatever else you're doing, they are doing your brakes, and they're doing it better than anybody else. Same prices as any brake shop in town, using the same parts. But the big key is they're saving time by coming to you to do what they do so you can multitask and do other things. And they're doing it the right way the first time. No upselling, no lazy mechanics that are having a bad day, that are taking their own sweet time, wasting all of yours. Nope, it's all done while you do other things so that you make sure that you stay on your schedule for the day. And they do your brakes better than anybody else. Check them out today. That's newbreaks.com. That's NUbreaks.com. Mention ESPN 97.5. Save 10%. More so than that, save time, which is saving money, which is why it's the only way you should get your brakes done going forward at any time soon. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's newbreaks.com.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, you get one player, one NFL veteran, and you get their entire career to place on the Texans for the entirety of that career. So if you go J.J. Watt, which I'm not sure he's not my answer, you get him at 22 years old, starts for the Texans 2022, and you get him going forward to be part of this rebuild. Don't tell Nick Caserio I said that. Who is the one?
Wait, no quarterback.
Can't pick a quarterback. So stop texting us in your quarterback. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. HRMP listener line. Who would be yours?
Well, I'll tell you what. I thought about Watt. Someone suggested on the text line TJ Watt.
But also they say it's easy. TJ Watt. Is TJ Watt leaps and bounds ahead of JJ Watt?
No.
Is TJ Watt leaps and bounds ahead of Aaron Donald?
No.
Yeah, TJ Watt. It's not easy, TJ Watt. In fact, I would say it's not TJ Watt.
I think my slam dunk pick was going to be Aaron Donald, just because at the position that he plays, with as disruptive as he can have a long career of just wreaking havoc defensively, no matter what else you put around him. I think my sexy pick would be Micah Parsons, because we haven't seen enough of him, but in 1 year, we've seen enough of him that I think that dude right there, for a long period of time, has the ability to do so many things well on defense, above average, like excel, like at a very high level, that he impresses me too. But I think the safest pick for me was Aaron Donald.
See, that's tough for me to go Parsons ahead of Donald, because I love Micah Parsons. And like, what's great about Parsons is that he's still very young. Yep. You have him going forward. But for this exercise, you're getting Aaron Donald at 22.
That's what I'm saying.
So, like, I can't put Parsons ahead of Aaron Donald. Now,
no, I didn't, but I said right. The sexy pick would be, we don't know all of Micah Parsons hasn't won a defensive player of the year or done the things that the Watts are doing or have done.
Right.
But boy, oh boy, does he look like he could.
Now, are you for sure going defensive end? Like, Aaron Donald can do a little bit of both, but more of a, you know, getting to the quarterback from the edge of a 3-4, however you want to use him. Mm-hmm. We saw J.J. Watt, 3-time defensive player of the year. I think that he could be in this conversation as well. Brendan used the example of Von Miller, who people were saying is a comp for Will Anderson, who's coming into the NFL draft like next year. If you knew that he was going to be Von Miller, how are you passing on Will Anderson at number one, which was kind of the basis of this conversation? It's hard for me to go over Aaron Donald, because I think he is the best non-quarterback player that we've seen in the last decade, maybe even longer. I think J.J. Watt has come as close to Donald as anybody else. Now, some people might say, well, in this new day in, you know, of the NFL, where passing numbers are what they are and wide receivers are getting $40 million a year, are you for sure going a defensive end or, you know, an edge rusher over a wide receiver?
Yeah, I am. Professor Riley, I had a question, though, was that when you inherit their whole career, do you also inherit their injury-prone last years of their career or last recent years of their career, like J.J. Watt?
I mean, really what I was going for here is if you could add any type of players. I wasn't necessarily trying to replicate a career to a perfect idea. I will say it's funny he brings up receiver, because you guys already mentioned J.J. Watt as a possibility. Mm-hmm. I told Nick sitting here next to me, our intern, that I would seriously consider DeAndre Hopkins.
I think Hopkins would be on a short list here. Yeah, I think he would.
Which is kind of crazy.
But then you know he's going to do PEDs and set your franchise back for at least a year.
He's talking about. You asked him a question. I don't even think he's.
Hey man,
to
I'm
the
just
answer.
Trying to be. I'm being a realist here. I'm throwing all the details.
Why is that crazy for you to say though, Brendan? Because the Houston Texans had two of those players who you might pick as like one player to
on
have
the
for the rest of their career that were both at Houston Texans at the same time.
Yeah,
and you can thank Bill O'Brien for that.
The thing is, too, is when you look at it from Aaron Donald's perspective. Again, the reason why you could take a corner too to try and disrupt teams that are going so pass happy these days and get a corner. That, like, my man from the Rams.
You're talking about Jalen Ramsey?
Jalen Ramsey. You could get a Jalen Ramsey type, and then you could combat one-on-one any team that brings in a big-time wide receiver and kind of negate that in terms of your defensive game plan. What I like
if you were the Rams and you told the Rams they can only pick Donald or Ramsey, who are they going with?
I think they're still taking Aaron Donald.
Yeah, I do too.
See, because I think the other thing is from zones to doubles to other things you can do, you can still defend another team's best receiver or receivers and get away with it. It doesn't take just one guy. But what Aaron Donald does from getting to the quarterback to disrupting the running game to putting pressure on every single lineman, the way they move him around and do things, I think it's hard to replicate that with any other position on the field. That's why I like Parsons. He's not as big and bulky, but because he can get the running backs, he can guard a tight end. He can you can move him around to where you can capitalize on his athleticism and move him inside and outside, and he does so much to disrupt every play that I think that he has the potential, when all is said and done, to do a lot of damage over the course of his career. But you already know going in the resume that you're getting that you're going to see
right.
with the guys we're talking about other than him.
Micah Parsons is a freak, and I'm very much looking forward to watching Micah Parsons over the course of his career. It's hard for me to budge off of Aaron Donald for the a non-quarterback off of this list. But if you had to go receiver, like Brendan said, DeAndre Hopkins, if you had to go receiver, what type of receiver are you going with? Would you go DeAndre? Do you go Devontae Adams? Do you go Larry Fitzgerald? Do you go Tyreek Hill? Like, what type of receiver, if you had to go receiver, would you go?
I think the best of both worlds case scenario is you get a guy that physically, from his makeup, can handle taking some hits. Because I think Tyreek Hill can be fragile. And I think he's very one-dimensional in terms of getting down the field. He doesn't like to go across the middle. He's not big on going into traffic or going on that hard out where he knows he's going to face someone that's going to hit him somewhere where he doesn't want to be hit. I think that when you look at Adams, he's had a little of that too, where he doesn't like to get hit. You'd like to get a guy, like ideally in his prime, a Julio Jones that had the speed to do whatever he wanted to do, but also had the physicality where you might get hurt more than he does when you try and bring him down. I think that's the ultimate receiver in the NFL in today's game. But you also see that he doesn't last, the longevity of his career is basically affected by how physical he was.
So which one are you going?
I still am going with a more big athletic. Here's the other factor that I think that you have to factor in. I go Hopkins simply because he's got speed. He, as much as there are times he doesn't like
burner,
to get hit,
but fast enough.
But the biggest key that we're not thinking about yet that Will Fuller would like to be Exhibit A for is you got to have some mitts. And the fact that Hopkins with one hand can do it, Will Fuller can do it too, is so impressive. We saw it with the one Hail Mary, but you can just throw it. We said all the time, a 50-50 ball becomes a 70-30 ball when you throw it to DeAndre Hopkins because of his ability with those big hands to bring anything down.
You know what position I wouldn't think to consider?
Kicker.
Running back.
No, I'm not adding a kicker.
Punter.
Well, no, there's a position I wouldn't think to consider, but a player in it who I would. Travis Kelce.
See, somebody texted in Gronk.
And I think that's a good one, too. I wouldn't, generally speaking, think of tight end, but the top couple tight ends could be interesting.
Also, because just from like a position scarcity point of view. If you're getting an elite tight end, you're getting an elite pass catcher, and you're doing it with a tight end position where it's more difficult to find production than receiver as a whole.
Those
ideally,
guys create,
if he can block, too, right?
Yeah.
Because he enhances your offensive line.
Create mismatches on offense in a way that I don't think any other player you can add to the offense does.
No, I think tight ends are undervalued.
Skip, why are you forgetting about me, Skip? I think the way that I can pass catch and block, Skip, I deserve more consideration than the other guy, Skip.
He was a great tight end.
He's a Hall of Famer.
But, if you're Travis Kelce, and, he's a little bit long in the tooth now, but, he was not that far removed from his
peak. He's still damn good.
He's still really good. But, 2-3 years ago when they were having the big arguments about, their franchise tag and how much they should get paid, why wouldn't Travis Kelce make $40 million? Why is he not getting top five receiver money?
He should get receiver type money
Absolutely.
For the way that he catches the football. And I think that the new second coming of Travis Kelce is George Kittle. And if George Kittle had a consistent quarterback to throw him the football like Patrick Mahomes, George Kittle could be the next generation of Travis Kelce, because his hands and ability to go up in traffic and get footballs is amazing, but his physicality allows him to block and do things on the offensive line that a lot of tight ends didn't sign up for and don't want any part of. Darren Waller doesn't want to block anybody.
Yeah, he's a little older now. He's in his 30s. People forget that Waller's in his 30s because he hasn't been around the NFL that long because of all the stuff that he was getting into before then. But, I mean, Kelce and Kittle, I mean, they've been top two tight ends for the last 3 years or so. Now, Kelce, a little higher echelon than Kittle. And I would say, yeah, you're right. It's because of Mahomes and it's because of that offense where San Francisco loves to run the ball a little bit more. So you have to see him play a little bit differently. A lot of people are saying old players like Reggie White, Andre Johnson.
Well, Reggie White was special.
Now it's like almost a different conversation.
Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor are guys that if you want to go back a ways in terms of changing not only a game, but the game itself, by the way they were used, that those are two guys that have to be in the conversation.
3527 could go Troy Polamalu at safety. See, that to me becomes the position. Like, it's like I love Troy Polamalu, but I'm not going safety over edge rusher. I'm not going safety over wide receiver. You know, one position that we've blindly ignored, which probably is not very wise of us, but a left tackle. Like, if you can get a game-changing left tackle that is the very best at their position, and also tackles last longer in the NFL than wide receivers
do. Joe Thomas for, what, 17 years?
Yeah, absolutely. You get their plight, and you don't have to worry. You just, hey, you're our left tackle. You're going to protect whoever our quarterback is. Since I can't pick a quarterback, I mean, this is kind of a different way to have what is the most important position conversation, and I think we've hit it. To me, it's defensive end, if it's a non-quarterback. Defensive end, left tackle. And nowadays, you can probably throw a wide receiver in there. Although, if I have Pat Mahomes or a quarterback like that, I don't need the wide receiver. I'd rather spend my money in other places. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Rockets Summer League has come to an end, which is sad because I loved watching it. What?
I've seen enough Josh Christopher ball hogging.
Okay, that's fair enough. But are you confident saying that Tari Eason is part of the foundation going forward? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible. And that's why I love these guys. Knuckleheads.
Ready for big summer fun? Then join ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 on the road during the second annual summer circuit throughout the greater Houston area. Visit our events and register to win a family getaway to Lafayette, the heart of Louisiana's Cajun and Creole country.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for Texas A&M Athletics. Catch all the football and basketball action right here as the Aggies make their way through the SEC. Only on ESPN 97.5. Giga Mags. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I was looking through Twitter. We'll get into the Tari Eason stuff in just a second. But the All-Star game going on right now, festivities are going on right now. Home Run Derby tonight. They're the All-Star games tomorrow. But Dusty Baker was talking to the media. He said about the AL starter, because they're going Shane McClanahan tomorrow. Dusty Baker on Shane McClanahan says, I've never seen him pitch. Chandler Rome says, it's worth noting that Shane McClanahan pitched against the Astros in Game 6 of the 2020 ALCS, a game Dusty Baker managed in the third base dugout. McClanahan allowed 5 hits and 3 runs in an inning and 2/3.
I mean, he had a lot to worry about with his own team that day, Jeremy. I don't think he was worried about who was pitching on the other side.
These are those moments where I try to calm myself down.
Did you say he only went an inning and 2/3?
He went an inning and 2/3.
I understand why Dusty forgot about that.
Dusty might have had Chipotle the night before, and those were the inning and 2/3 that he was stuck in the clubhouse bathroom.
He remembers what Henry Aaron did on July 18th, 1962.
It's a great call.
He doesn't remember that Shane McClanahan pitched against him in Game 6 of the 2020 ALCS less than 2 years ago.
Sometimes honesty is not the best policy.
That is
Dusty gonna Dusty in a nutshell.
I've never seen him pitch. What a stupid thing to say, even if you've never seen him pitch. Like, you might play this dude in the ALCS. Like,
and you talk also about have guys on your staff that you can go to so you can figure out what you don't know.
I've never seen him pitch. About a dude who he's seen pitch. Up close and personal.
I hope that this means that Dusty's going to overuse every Yankee and every guy that he can, because he's going to Dusty.
Is it okay that the Astros manager doesn't remember seeing a guy 18 months ago?
No, it's not okay.
Right? It's like, am I outrageous for thinking that's not okay? Am I outrageous for thinking this is ridiculous? Am I outrageous here? 713-780-3776.
It's not only that, boy, excuse me, Brennan, but it's now the lead story on
ESPN.
Shane
McClanahan was sitting next to him.
He was sitting right next to him in a press conference when Dusty said that he had never seen him pitch, just to make it that much worse.
I don't think it's actually a big deal, but it's definitely a bad look.
It's a bad look.
I don't think it's a big deal.
But it is.
But it's like this dude's is managing Major League Baseball.
It's a pretty big facepalm, is what I would say.
It's embarrassing.
I've seen Shane McClanahan pitch.
That is a David Culley response right there.
I don't even know if it's David Culley.
Oh, my God. That's David Culley and no one else that I can think of.
I've never seen him pitch.
Maybe La Russa at this age and state of mind?
You know what? You just talked me out of being in a bad mood. Because I saw this and I was in a bad mood. Like, this dude's managing the local team in Houston that's a World Series contender and doesn't know who Shane McClanahan is. Well, yeah, he knows who he is, but hadn't seen him pitch when he has. You just cheered me up by mentioning Tony La Russa.
You're welcome.
I am thankful that it's not Tony La Russa. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Rocket Summer League is over. It is done. I really liked what I saw out of Jabari Smith the last couple of games. We didn't talk about him as much because it was like weekends, and it wasn't the first couple of games, and like first games always talk about more than the middle games. Jabari kind of developed a little bit of a dribble game, an off-the-dribble game.
He got comfortable.
Like, he looked pretty dangerous in those last couple of games. I was really impressed to see the development from game one to game four, because like after game two, it was like, okay, well, he's still very raw offensively. He's got a long way to go, which I still think he does. He needs to work a lot on his handles. But like from game two to game four is stuff that I didn't think we would see until like December.
No, I think that he got comfortable in his surroundings. He started to realize from the speed of the game, the ball, the adjustments that had to be made from the college game to his first couple pro games. Look, that's why it's a process in the summer league. That's why they're calling it. That's why it is the summer league. It's because you're supposed to get better. You're supposed to get some of the kinks out before you get to training camp, where you're playing with true NBA players and developing your roster for the season. And I think that it happened a lot quicker for certain others than it did for him. So that's why we were paying a little bit more attention after his first couple games. But he was drafted where he was drafted for a reason. We had him rated as the best player in the draft for a reason. The kid's got way too much talent for that to last more than a couple of games. And because he has so much talent, you already saw the improvement and the development that you were talking about. The bigger thing to me is that Tari Eason just took the entire world by storm with the way he came in and played. And as much as you can say that from Jabari's perspective, there was stuff he had to learn and then he had to develop it and he had to get better at it, Tari Eason, on the flip side, really didn't have a learning curve and just came in and from the jump said, you know what sells and works on every level during any type of basketball game? Hustle, rebounding, and that kind of, and finishing on the wing, doing the things that is just simplistic basketball. If you play your tail off and you utilize your God-given ability with reach and positioning, you can rebound, you can finish on the break, you can defend. And my goodness, did they find out in a short period of time that we might be talking in the next 5 or so years of a steal of the draft.
If he can shoot 40%, which is lofty.
From three?
Yeah, from three.
Oof.
If he can become a 40% three-point shooter with the rebounding he gives you, the defense he gives you, and the ability to, I think, even attack the rim a little bit, especially on the fast break, that dude's going to make a lot of money.
Not first year 40%.
No. I'm talking about like at his best.
Yeah, if he gets into his peak years.
No, not his first year.
And he's, you know, even flirting with 40% from three with everything else he brings to the table.
He'd be one of the best role players in the league.
He's not just trying to be P.J. Tucker.
Yeah.
He's better than P.J. Tucker.
I still like my Lance Stephenson comp. I think
he's not nuts.
Yeah.
I don't need him to see. I don't want to see him play the air guitar either or blow in at LeBron's ear.
I don't mind all that stuff. I kind of like that for my.
Because you love all that drama.
No, I kind of like a dude with attitude. Like, I kind of. That's why I like Dennis Rodman. Like, you gotta have that dude.
Okay, but you also. One thing with Dennis Rodman as a comparable, too, the one thing that you don't love about those guys is they can also get thrown out in the biggest moment of your season. At Ron Artest is another one.
They need to keep their cool. Like,
they don't know how to push the envelope, but not mail it in.
And I don't know if you can rein them in. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they kind of have that, you know, that nut loose. You know what I mean?
If I could tell you some of the stories with some of these guys, but in particular, someone we mentioned, like, you don't realize the levels that behind the scenes people had to go through to make sure that it wasn't just on the court, but that it didn't go to levels that would have been so costly and so like troublesome for your entire franchise, that that's what you don't want when you've got, especially an impressionable young bunch of kids. The one you don't have want to have the one kid that's the bad apple that kind of sways everybody else. And so you don't need a Ron Artest or a who'd you say?
Like Stevenson was my call.
Yeah, Lance like a Stevenson
Rodman.
Or Dennis Rodman.
Even a Draymond Green a little bit's got the attitude, you know.
I don't think Draymond Green is as severely over the top as the other guys.
He gets ejected all the time.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. Yeah, he doesn't know when to pad the brakes.
Tari Eason, though, is he part of this Rockets foundation? Is he part? Yes. Like, has he done enough? I mean, it's only summer league. Let's be realistic. It's only been the summer league. Mm-hmm. Are you confident saying that Tari Eason is part of this Rockets foundation going forward?
Tari Eason not only made Garuba expendable, you all is forgiven.
I'm not sure you can get anything for Garuba, though.
That's what I'm saying. You're not going to get anything for him, but you can even admit that you screwed up, swung, and missed at a first-round pick in Garuba. But the fact is you replaced him within one draft. You got, with another lower first-round pick, you got a guy that I said when he was drafted, is Garuba with all the offense you were hoping he would develop? It's already there. You got Tari Eason, and now you don't need Garuba. And by the way, you might not need Jayshon Tate. You got him on a steal of a deal for 3 years. But now if there are veteran teams that want him after December 15th, you got a guy that has trade value for you from contending teams, and you've got a guy that's going to replace him already in Tari Eason.
Yeah, I'm confident enough to say that Eason's part of this rotation, part of this foundation going forward. And at like what extent, I think those are conversations you have. Because the Jayshon Tate aspect, I ultimately think he's going to replace Jayshon Tate.
But remind everybody the point you brought up that not a lot of people were aware of. Because everybody thought Jayshon Tate is the same age. And
he's
late 20s. He doesn't fit the mold of what this team is trying to be in terms of developing all these guys in the same age range to all develop and prosper at the same time.
You think Eason's more of a three or a four, though?
I think he's a three.
See, I think
that
he can play
guard
both.
Fours. I think he's a three that can guard fours, but I don't think he's going to put his butt on the post and get you points in the paint.
No, but I think he can defend the four.
Yes, like, that's what I'm saying.
He's kind of a small ball four. Like, I don't know if he's a good enough three-point shooter right now to be like a 30-minute wing. You know what I mean?
See, he's P.J. Tucker. He's a three that can guard fours and fives. I don't think he's going to guard fives. He could,
but Tucker was a four with the Rockets. He never played the three with the Rockets.
There were times he played him at the three.
Very little.
It's only because he's also
he was
6'4" and a half.
Four. Right. I mean, but that was also their brand. Like, their brand was they're going to play their undersized lineup all the time, and you're going to have to keep up with them. Now, Tari's tall. I mean, Tari's big.
That's what I'm saying. Tari's just doesn't have the girth to go down on the block.
He's not going to be a scorer.
Right, and try and get you points in there. But like I said, he's a three that can guard fours. I don't want him guarding fives unless it's Christian Wood. I think that he gives you enough versatility defensively, but his ideal position offensively is the three.
Yeah. I don't know.
He can bring now. He can play if he plays stretch four. He can make big guys try and come out and guard him on the perimeter. Then he can take him off the dribble or get the three ball on him. So he gives teams problems that you're playing against.
I'm not sure he's ever going to be that guy though, where he's like beating dudes off the dribble, especially with like a Jalen Green and a Jabari and whoever else you have on the team. Like, he's never going to be a top three offensive option.
You know where I think he is? When guys close out too quick. Right?
Oh, so, he's going to blow by him.
So when he's on the perimeter and you're expecting, look, he's a better-than-average three-point shooter, he's going to shoot that, mm-hmm. and you go out to the perimeter too quick, now he puts it on the floor, goes by you, and with his long arms, he finishes around the rim.
No, I meant more like generating the offense. Like, I think he will be a weapon in that spot, and I think that he can develop into being a pretty good three-point shooter. And if he develops into a good three-point shooter, I think you have a problem, because everything else that you mentioned, he's going to do. He'll blow by, he'll get to the rim. He's not a bad passer either, and then he can finish around the rim, and he always seems to find openings, too, to help out his teammates who are willing to pass the ball.
I think the guy we haven't mentioned yet is the guy that's done exactly what I wanted him to do. He gave them the option to have an insurance policy for KPJ.
Ty
Washington. I don't care if you can nitpick him apart for his, you know, his point guard versus shooting guard. What is he? But you know what? He knows the game of basketball, but he can shoot, he can score, he can pass. He's smart enough, if you talk to the coaches, that'll tell you that he understands the game already, mm-hmm. and he wants to be a leader. He's given you everything you needed him to be, so that if you do have to bail on KPJ, and we've talked about the reasons why, and this is in his final year, you got to make a decision on him, you don't feel like you're left butt naked with nothing to replace him with.
My fear's there, and I liked what I saw in the summer league too. I want to see him against NBA teams during the season, because my two biggest concerns, he's undersized for an NBA point guard, especially as a shooting guard, and then I think he's also overwhelmed with the NBA athleticism. Maybe not overwhelmed, but he's just kind of mediocre for an NBA athlete. But maybe he's got enough basketball know-how that he can get past it. Because Curry's not a tremendous athlete. James Harden's not a tremendous athlete. 713-780-ESPN.
Some people think next year he's going to be.
Who's that?
James Harden.
Yeah, because he's lost a bunch of weight. Yeah. Jordan says there's a lot of things to be annoyed by Dusty at throughout a season. Not remembering a random okay pitcher. This okay pitcher starting the American League All-Star game. He's faced isn't one of those things. Got to pick your battles with Dusty or you go mad. I'm to that point. Like, I've been to that point with the lineups. I've been to that point with the usage of the bullpen. So you're right, Jordan. You're 100% right. You do got to pick your battles with Dusty. I've thrown the white towel in a lot of different areas.
I mean, I think the one thing that you got to feel confident is he may not know any other team in the league and their players, but at least he's been around long enough to know his own team. And as long as we have to deal with slight Dusty's gonna Dusty's, but he knows the rest of the team well enough, I think they're still okay.
That's funny. 713-780-ESPN. So people have been asking us to weigh in on the Astros' first two picks. They're drafting right now. Haven't been able to look at it, but we'll get into a little bit of that. Also, Hunter Brown played in the Futures game over the weekend. He's getting frustrated with the Houston Astros, and is he forcing the Astros' hand? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
Independent thinking. Unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
First round and like the second round of the Major League Baseball draft were yesterday, which we'll discuss who the Astros drafted a little bit in just a second. But Chris Gross, who is the scouting director for the Houston Astros, they drafted Drew Gilbert, the kid out of Tennessee, their cleanup hitter, really good college numbers. Make of that what you will. But Chris Gross, to me, this sounds very much like an old dad who's not really that cool, trying to be relatable to a college-age kid, and he's trying to be hip. He's trying to be cool. I thought that this was one of the funniest things that came out of the Astros draft yesterday was scouting director Chris Gross calling Drew Gilbert, letting him know that he was their guy.
Drew Gilbert, Chris Gross, congratulations, man.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you.
So stoked to get you in the org here. You excited?
I'm fired up, man. I want to play. It's been long enough, so
yeah. I mean, you've worked your tail off for this moment. Enjoy it. We're ecstatic to get you in here. Hell of a career there at Tennessee. You and Coach V, you guys did great together, but excited to see you in the blue and orange in Astro Land.
No, I'm excited. I don't even know what to say. I'm ready to go. So.
All right, man. Enjoy the night. We'll be in touch.
Blue and orange in Astro Land. So
straight
stoked.
Fire, yo. Your drip is off the chain. You know what I'm saying?
So stoked to get you in the org. Who calls an organization an org? Have you ever heard somebody say that, period? Other than a web browser, other than .org, have you ever heard somebody call an organization an org?
Org chart might be the closest thing that we get to that.
I don't even know what that is.
Like in a company, an org chart is like the, you know.
No where- idea. First time I've ever heard that. Now, I think I'm ignorant here. I'm not calling you.
Yeah,
dumb.
I mean, an org chart heard of it. In any company is like how it's like the family tree of the business.
Huh.
Who do these managers report to? Who do these directors report to up and down? And then who reports to them? Huh. That's an org chart. That's as close as I think I've heard.
I've never heard a baseball team or a team in general be called, a sports team in general be called an org.
Me either.
But I can tell you in gaming, like gaming orgs are a thing.
So you're calling Chris Gross a gamer? The Astros scouting.
No, but
the chances an analytics guy is a gamer.
Decent.
Yeah.
But I'm not even saying that. I'm saying I actually think it may relate to a younger audience more than you think.
I think maybe so. But I've never ever heard somebody refer to a baseball organization as an org. And so stoked to get you in the org. Also, one of the underrated things to me was the very beginning when he introduces himself. He goes, Drew Gilbert, Chris Gross. Like, play that again from the very start. Like, this was really
the pauses,
weird to
it
me.
Was awkward.
Yeah, like, I'm so cool. My name's Chris Gross. You're Drew Gilbert. Check me out.
Drew Gilbert, Chris Gross. Congratulations.
Drew Gilbert, Chris Gross.
It's like he's talking to two different guys, Chris and Gilbert, and then he calls someone else Gross.
Yeah, I'm
like someone's eating the chips with their fingers. He's like, Drew, this is Gilbert, this is Chris. Oh, Gross. He's eating chips like that. Okay. Anyway, hey, yo, man, we're really stoked to have you in our org. So we want you to come with some straight drip from the get go, and then bring it because that's what we're talking about in the blue and the orange, yo.
So stoked to get you in the org. I'm gonna start calling people, Joel Blank, Jeremy Branham, and just like start my conversation that way.
Drew Gilbert, Chris Gross.
Drew Gilbert, Jay Beasley with the Houston Astros, you know what I'm saying, in the hizzy. What up, yo? Welcome to the H, you know what I'm saying? Put up the H and we'll get you some grills.
I'm so stoked to get you on the line.
How many J's you got, by the way, yo, Drew? How many pairs of J's you got? Because you got to have some drip when you get to the H.
I'm still angling for my first. Anyways, I was glued into the Major League Baseball draft yesterday. I was in. First time the Astros had a first rounder in a while. They also went through the second round. They also went through the competitive round B, I believe that it was. And Brendan was giving us some grief for watching the Major League Baseball draft yesterday. And he brought up the question, what is the least watchable event on the sports calendar? Why would you give us grief, though, for watching the Major League Baseball
draft first and foremost? I don't know if grief is the right way to put it.
It was tons of grief.
You enjoy whatever you want, but I do think the MLB draft might be the least watchable event.
Yo, he didn't bring that smoke my way, yo. You know what I'm saying? Because that conversation would have been lit.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been so stoked to get you in on
the
that
Kentucky
conversation.
The Kentucky Derby is worthless, for one.
Wow, I like the Derby. That's the most exciting 3 minutes in all sports.
Time out. How many minutes? How many minutes? Because the pregame and postgame is more like 6.5 hours.
Watch from post to post. No one's telling you how much you got to watch.
Excruciating.
I like the Derby. What are the least watchable events on the sports calendar? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. I'm not really the one to ask here because I feel like I love almost all sports. Like, it is very difficult for me to turn on a sport and not get some enjoyment on. That's not a sport.
Well, they think it is.
Jay Cutler's like competing.
He is. I saw that.
Championships in cornhole.
I saw that. I was at the gym and they were showing it. And they're like, I'm like, is that Jay Cutler? Where's the Marlboro?
He was married to Kristen Cavallari. Now he's winning cornhole championships. Yep.
Champion. The ESPYs was one mentioned in pre-show that I thought was another good contender.
See,
ESPYs are great.
I probably won't watch much of the ESPYs unless I'm literally doing nothing else. But I don't have anything wrong with the ESPYs. Like, if I found myself in a situation where I'm watching the ESPYs, I don't plan to, I would get some enjoyment out of
them. I enjoy the ESPYs because at least it is the top of every sport in attendance, and you're honoring and getting to choose. You know, you can stay dialed in because it's the play of the year. So you see three or four great plays.
It's called YouTube, man. I don't need a show for that.
Brendan, it's also what it's up against. When you take the week in which you had the Open Championship, so golf wasn't even a factor. The 1 week, a lot of people were hoping it would be. And you're not going to have baseball for for 3 days. And there's really nothing, and summer league's over. There's nothing to watch on television if you're looking for sports that you would say, you know what? I'll watch the captain tonight, and I'll watch I'm not going to really watch the All-Star game, but I would watch the ESPYs.
We really are in a time of year where we're asking the question, what's the least watchable event on the sports calendar?
This is the worst week in sports in the entire year.
This week.
I disagree with that. Like, I don't mind this week at all. Like,
Charlie Polillo consistently, in terms of, like, you know, Christmas and all the holiday vacations that you sign up for at the start of the year with your seniority, you can get whatever you want. This week coming up was a staple of Charlie will be off the whole week.
Astros got a doubleheader against the Yankees on Thursday and 3 games against a team that's won 14 games in a row.
You weren't supposed to have
that. All right, we'll eliminate that. 3 games against a team that's won 14 games in a row, second place in the AL West.
You didn't know that was coming, but yeah. I mean, it's a last-ditch effort to save the week. But the rest of the week absolutely sucks.
A couple of people have already texted us in. What's the least watchable sport or sport event on the calendar? 713-780-ESPN. Brendan said the Major League Baseball draft. 713-780-3776.
Copy everything about the NFL draft they could. Taking it outside with their little amphitheater set up. They copied every successful element of the NFL draft.
I'm fine with how they did it. Like, I want them to do that. Like, because for years it had been incredibly boring, and they used to have, like, teleconferences and just announcing the name. Like, I kind of like the production element of it, to be honest, because that's something that didn't exist for a very long time.
By the way, it's
gotten better and better.
Can I also say, whether it was planned this way or not, because I was concerned, just like I was ticked off that the top prospects in the Astros organization were going to get booed in the futures game, and they were basically delivering newspapers when it all went down. The fact that when I was worried when they got to the 28th pick that people were going to lose their mind and boo the Astros.
Yeah.
But the fact that they had kids from Uvalde that were going to make the pick completely just took that element out of it and let the draft keep going. So that was a good move.
That was a nice touch. I did like to see that for the Astros, and that Major League Baseball did that. That was a nice touch. 713-780-ESPN. What is the least watchable event on the sports calendar? A lot of people are saying the Pro Bowl for the NFL.
Oh, it's awful.
See, like, yep. I don't really care for any All-Star game a whole lot, but the NFL is the one that's by far of the big three way, way off of that list. I don't really care for NASCAR a whole lot, so, like, I don't have any interest in watching NASCAR. Like, that to me is very, like, that's not very watchable. I'd rather watch F1 than NASCAR.
I'd rather watch paint dry.
Than F1?
Than any auto race.
See, the Drive to Survive got me kind of, I wouldn't say hooked on F1 because I like the show more than I like the actual races, I'll turn on the races.
Is that like The Bachelor? Only they call it The Drive to Survive? Is that like a reality show?
It's almost nothing like that.
Oh.
No, it's nothing like that whatsoever.
What is The Drive to Survive?
It's a behind-the-scenes documentary on F1 that grew the popularity of the sport like 700%.
You've mentioned it.
They're also going to do it for golf. Which is fascinating because of the whole live stuff that's going on with that as well. Which, by the way, we had our PGA or our British, I shouldn't call it the British Open. I'm going to get chastised for saying that. The Open Championship draft, which top three golfers, Blankers won. Top one golfer, Brendan drafted Cam Smith. If you take all five, I won. So we all get a little participation.
No. The rule was the top three.
Oh, we all met. Look, it's golf's final major of the year. We all get an element of success.
I get bonus points to win the year. I am the player of the year.
It is funny, though, how Brendan wanted to bring it up today after he won.
Yeah, because he finally registered.
Well, he didn't win, but he did select the guy that won the Open Championship, which I find it a little bit insulting because it's the first thing he said to me. He texted me, do we have the results? I'm pumped up. I drafted Cam Smith. We literally made zero mention of it at the U.S. Open, even though it was in the rundown, when yours truly won the U.S. Open. So Brendan was very quick to want to mention it today.
He also talked mess to me that he was going to beat me, which he didn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
I picked the winner. That's more important.
In your mind?
Yeah.
But under the rules that you consistently change and make for everything that we do, the rules stated it was the aggregate of all three of our top three golfers. Yeah. Therefore, Blankers you didn't
won.
Win.
Blankers I never won. Agreed to these rules.
Blankers won. All right, so what is the least watchable event on the sports calendar? 713-780-ESPN. We will have a word or two about the picks the Astros made yesterday. I have two comps for both of these guys. Best case scenario. Like, I'm not saying they're going to turn into this, but best case scenario that each have Houston ties, and also why Hunter Brown is getting impatient. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Yeah! ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.